proceed to the fifth case, Fuller versus the City of Lafayette.
Easy.
Mr. Justice.
Gentlemen. I come before you today and feel a little bit like a woolly mammoth with this case, because I'm just a county seat lawyer, and this is a county seat lawyer's case. It's not a class action. It's not an injunction. This is a case where my client relied on a duty imposed by law on the City of Lafayette under the Americans with Disabilities Act, and he was injured as a result. And that's all there is to it. One client, one case. We want reasonable compensation, but the trial judge said, no, well, they had a duty, and they didn't perform it, but they didn't perform it enough. They did not perform it not enough, I guess, for you to get compensation. He said the lack of accessibility didn't go on long enough for my client to be entitled to damages under the ADA. What happened here is basically this. On a Monday, the 11th of December, the elevators, the week beginning the 11th of December, the elevators went down in this railroad station. They stopped working sometime in that week. On Friday of that week, it apparently snowed, and snow accumulated on the ramp which led from the station up to a bridge across the river. That was the alternate means of access. Once the snow was there, the ramp was inaccessible. The elevators were down. You couldn't get off the platform. The platform was like a trap for a disabled person in a wheelchair, which is what my client was. My client, on Sunday, gets on the train in West Virginia, rides to Lafayette, Indiana. It's a long trip, more than 12 hours. He can't sleep. He gets off the train in his wheelchair with his son with him, and the train pulls out, and he's stuck on the platform outside. Temperatures in single digits. He gets frostbite. Those are the basic facts of the case. The important facts about what happened that day are that at 6:45 that morning, before the train gets there about 11:30, 6:45, his brother comes to the station. His brother checks the elevators, they don't work. His brother sees the ramp covered with snow, it's impassable. His brother goes to the station maintenance man, Fred Taylor, works for the city, and says, how's my brother going to get off this platform? He's coming in a wheelchair. He can't get off the platform. Mr. Taylor says, we'll take care of it. That's at 6:45 in the morning. At 9 o'clock in the morning, Greg comes back. Nothing's been done. No ramps been shoveled, no elevators have been fixed. He says, what's going to happen here? And a lady in her office, not a city employee, calls the elevator repair company. That's the first time they get called that day. Elevators have been down possibly since the 11th. And on the 18th, they call the elevator repair company. Elevator repair company sends a man right in, but he can't fix it. The man looks around for Mr. Taylor, the city person who's supposed to be there at the station, 10 o'clock in the morning. Can't find him. When he can't fix the elevators, he says, where's Mr. Taylor? Can't find him. And then, about 11:30, just before the train arrives, Mr. Taylor goes off to lunch. And he has no idea how Mr. Foley, my client, is going to get off that platform. Train comes in, no Mr. Taylor there. Volunteers come and help Mr. Foley. A man named Bill Okada and Mr. Foley's son take him up the stairs. It takes him about half an hour to climb to the next level in very severe weather conditions. They then have to take him through the snow on the bridge to get into his brother's truck. It takes about another 15 minutes or something like that. He's out in the cold more than an hour, and 2 days later he's in the emergency room with frostbite on his legs. He's diabetic, he has other conditions. Those are basic facts. Now, on those facts, what the trial court said was, okay, the elevators were down, and the thing was inaccessible. But 4 days wasn't too long. 4 days wasn't too long. And the ramp was blocked, and you couldn't get up it, but half an hour was blocked wasn't too long. Well, the natural question is, how long is too long? The court relied on a case, Midget, which is a bus lift case. In Midget, the regs say 30 minutes is too long. In Midget, the court said 3 days is a sufficient limitation, but here it was 4 days. And of course, bus lift cases, we don't think of the same as elevators. and the busload situation, they're going to be marooned and trapped.
Well, are there any regulations that bear on this issue?
Yes, sir. There is a regulation, which we cited in our brief, and the regulation has three parts. One part says, temporary interruptions in service for maintenance or repairs don't violate the Act. But it also says that accommodation must be made when access is denied, some regulation. For some reason, the trial court honed in on the last part, but didn't pay attention, we believe, to the first part. Two other points I'd like to make. First, the defense over and over again says the elevators failed because of... Excuse me.
Which regulation in particular are you thinking of?
Yes, sir.
37.161C?
That is the part which I believe... Let me see. It's not reg, Judge. I'm not sure that is the correct subsection. Here we go. It's 49 CFR 37161 A, B, and C. The C part is what the trial court honed in on. Let me find that. Yes. But the B part says accessibility features shall be properly repaired if they are damaged or out of order. And when an accessible feature is out of order, the entity shall take reasonable steps to accommodate individuals with disabilities who would otherwise use this feature. They didn't do it. Two points, if I may, and then I've reserved the remainder of my time. Number one, the defense says...
Has the agency ever attempted to quantify how often one must check? You know, I take it that that's the root problem for the elevator. Nobody knows how long it was out of service because nobody checked it. Nobody else had used it in some time, apparently, and nobody had checked it. Do we know what obligations are on how often one has to check a piece of equipment?
Your Honor, I would submit that it's fact-sensitive. In this case, two railroad trains...
The question I'm asking is regulations. Do we know from the regulations what is required?
I believe not.
Okay.
The defense keeps saying that the elevators failed because of the severe weather. That's not in the record. The elevator repairman says he doesn't know why the part broke. He was specifically asked, was it because of cold? He said, I don't know why it broke. The weather was severe.
You mean he didn't know why the heater broke?
Yes, sir.
We know why the elevator stopped working after the heater broke. It was cold weather.
That's right. That's right.
Okay.
Number two, the weather was severe, but as at least two members of this panel know, it was not unnecessarily unusually severe for northern Indiana in the wintertime. It snows in Indiana in the winter, and it gets very cold in Indiana in the winter. And
only two of us know this?
I'm sure the two of you know it, Your Honor.
The chief may not be aware of it.
That's why I like this point.
I live in Indiana.
The problem is that the chief lives on the north side of Chicago and I live on the south side, so I'm more attuned to Indiana weather.
In any case, gentlemen, what I'm saying is it was readily foreseeable that it would get this cold, in fact, a lot colder than this, and readily foreseeable that it would snow and snow a lot more than this. And no provision was made for these circumstances.
You never get serious snow in northern Indiana.
If you could take judicial notice, Your Honor.
If this were Watertown, now that would be serious.
And Judge Eastwood really does come from a snow belt in Buffalo, so he uses a very high measure, Mr. Justice.
Yes, back before we were from Chicago, the chief was from downstate New York, and I'm from upstate.
Thank you, Mr. Justice.
Yes, sir. I've reserved a little time.
Yes. Ms. Roberts.
Your Honor, may it please the Court. My name is Liberty Roberts, and I represent the City of Lafayette and Fred Taylor.
Would you describe the physical, how this whole layout occurs, the ramps and stations, where the elevators are, just sort of give us a picture of what it looks like?
Absolutely, Your Honor. I'll do my best job. I believe that it's laid out maybe better than I can state today in the statement of facts in our brief, which was through an affidavit of an official with the City of Lafayette.
I attempted to read the statement of facts, but it was frozen shut.
Oh, okay. I apologize. Well, I'll do my best here. The train station is set up so that the train comes in the middle of the station. the passengers get off of the platform on one side of the station. In order to access, and we'll refer to that as a platform, they get off on the platform. In order to access the station itself and to get to the parking lot, they must cross over the track to get to the other side. There are a couple of ways that this can be done. There is, well, I shouldn't say they can only cross over the tracks. They can cross over the tracks, or they can go into West Lafayette across the bridge. In order to cross over the tracks, passengers can use either the elevator up, go across the platform, and use an elevator down, or they can use stairway up, go across the tracks, and use stairway down. There are three levels of the station. It's not necessary that the passengers access all three levels, but from one side, they do have to get from the platform up to the third level to get across the track. The other option is that they can take a ramp that's available, and that ramp does lead from the platform and then crosses a pedestrian bridge that's known as the John Myers Bridge and would lead into West Lafayette, which could then vehicles could then be obtained on that side of the tracks as well. The incident that's complained of here that relates to the elevators is a single isolated incident. The federal regulations do provide an exception for temporary and isolated incidents relating to repairs and maintenance.
Are there any rules, either regulations or decisions, on how often this equipment has to be tested?
No, Your Honor, I do not believe that there are regulations stating that. And in looking at how often
it's obvious at LaSalle that Lafayette didn't test the stuff, or they would know when it broke. But it seems odd, very difficult to know when repairs are necessary if no routine testing is done.
I would agree with you, Your Honor, that the City of Lafayette did not check the elevators on a daily basis. However, there is a routine.
Apparently didn't test them on a weekly basis.
I can't say for sure when the city tested them, but there was a service agreement in place with another elevator or with an elevator company that actually specializes in this as opposed to the city.
That's who would repair it, but you'd expect that somebody on the premises would get in the elevator and go up or down once a day to make sure it was still working.
And that was
elevators
not...
Elevators have this tendency to stop. They always stop when you most need them. That's how they're programmed, but you would expect, you know, every once in a while you would check.
I would respectfully disagree with the fact that they're programmed this way, although it may seem that case. But we are talking about a company that is hired not only for repairs but also for maintenance. They perform the routine maintenance that were required on these elevators in order to keep them in a condition where they could be run on a regular basis.
Thanks. Ms. Roberts, Mr. Justice suggests, though, that we've got a significant period of time when the facts most favorably viewed from his position would suggest that it's been out. I know you're focusing on the single incident, but how about the temporal aspect here of the better part of a week, if that's the case, if the record reflects that?
Opposing counsel is arguing that the elevators were out, and I believe his statement was possibly as early as December 11th. And that is not supported by the facts. Although the standard is that this court needs to make all reasonable inferences in favor of the plaintiff, does not mean that the court has to construe all facts as the plaintiff argues that they are.
No question. What would you suggest the record reflects in that regard?
The record on this issue shows Fred Taylor's testimony, and that again is what plaintiff's counsel is relying on as well. Fred Taylor's testimony is that the elevators went down on either Thursday the 14th or Friday the 15th. He couldn't recall which day, and that is cited in both briefs.
And we have an arrival on when?
On Monday the 18th. So the elevators went down possibly as early as sometime during the business day on Thursday.
That would suggest if he knew it was Thursday or Friday that he had checked on Wednesday and then checked again on Friday and found them not operational. And that's the only way you could pin it down to 2 days.
That
would also imply that even though he checked on Friday, he did nothing to call the repair service.
Your Honor, I would disagree with the checking on Wednesday. My understanding is not necessary.
If he said it failed on either Thursday or Friday, that had to mean that he knew it was working on Wednesday, right?
Yes.
Okay? And if it failed on either Thursday or Friday, that meant he knew it didn't fail on Saturday, And that had to mean that he checked and found it non-functional on Friday. That's the only way such a statement can be true. Right? So he checked on Friday. He had checked on Wednesday, checked on Friday, finds it not working, and therefore he knew it had failed on either Thursday or Friday. And I take it we also have to infer that come on Friday, when he knew it was not working, he, that is the city's agent, did nothing to have it repaired.
No, Your Honor. As a matter of fact, the record...
Why isn't that the only sensible inference?
The record is undisputed that Fred Taylor, who was the only city employee at the station, called his supervisor, who was off location, and reported the problem. There's no dispute as to that. There is a dispute as to what happened at that point, what took place in the supervisor's office.
Is there a claim that the city called for repairs on Friday?
Yes, Your Honor. The city's position is that they, in fact, called for repairs. It was not logged in, and no one apparently came to the station. Because the individual calling for repairs was not at the station, they were not aware that repairs were not made on that day. The dispute here, of course, is that the records from the repair company show no call being logged in. That would be an issue that would be decided at trial.
So we have a potentially disputed issue, and given the posture of the case, we have to assume that the city knew on Friday that the elevator wasn't working and made no effort whatsoever to get it working. That's the assumption we have to make, isn't it?
Yes.
And then comes Monday, 3 days later. The city has had 3 days' notice and done nothing.
Yes, Your Honor. The fact is not that what's important in viewing these 3 days is that Saturday and Sunday, in fact, was a weekend where no city employee was assigned to the station. Therefore, without receiving notice or a report from one of the tenants to open up the building on the weekend or another passenger, there was no way for the city to know that the elevators, in fact, had not been repaired. There was no breakdown.
We have to assume that no request was made on Friday, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Right. So, obviously, if no request was made, no repairs would be made.
Yes, Your Honor.
Well,
assuming the fact
we're just trying to apply the regulations here. If we assume the city knew 3 days before these events that the elevator needed repair and did nothing, would it, on your view, still be in compliance with the regulations?
Yes, it would, Your Honor. Not only the fact that this is an isolated, temporary time period, but during the time period, there was a ramp still available, so there was a reasonable accommodation provided. The city did not know if the elevator had been repaired. Assuming that they should have known that the elevator had not been repaired, we're still talking about a matter of a day when they could have contacted the company to get out there. Once the city had noticed that this gentleman was arriving in a wheelchair, the elevator repair company was contacted right away and informed not only that the repairs were needed, but also that this gentleman was arriving and that they needed to be there before 10:30 when the train was expected to arrive at that time. Because the elevators were repaired within a matter of days, we are talking about, and I'll point out that the argument of counsel is that the ramp was not available during this entire time period, and that again is not supported by the record. The record shows that the snow fell over the weekend. It was such a huge snow and so bad that Monday morning when Mr. Foley's brother goes to the station to pick him up, he finds that it's going to take him twice as long to get to the train station because the roads are so bad. This shows that there wasn't sufficient time to remove this amount of snow from either the roads or from the sidewalk. However, once Fred Taylor arrived at work, he begins shoveling the snow. It's not disputed that's what he's begun doing. There may be complaints as to where he chose to begin shoveling the snow, but it's not disputed that he did do that. He then goes to lunch, returns, continues to shovel the snow. The reasonable inference that can be drawn from this, Your Honors, is that the snow was removed, if not on that Monday, then on that Tuesday. The argument that the snow was not removed until the 22nd is not supported by the record. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Roberts. Mr. Justice.
In the record, Exhibit F, Kone maintenance log. This was not an isolated instance. There are two pages here covering a period of several months in which the elevators broke down over and over again, both before and after. Number two, They didn't notify the elevator company right away. 6:45, Greg Foley was in that station. He said, the elevators don't work. Greg Taylor says, I'll take care of it. The elevator company isn't called till 9:15, and it's not by the city at all. Number three, they said they didn't have sufficient time to remove the snow. There's a quarter-mile-long bridge that goes from Lafayette over across the river. That's what the ramp gives onto. It gives onto the bridge. The bridge had been cleared until a point maybe 50 feet from the station side. The bridge had been cleared. Somehow, somebody had time to clear the bridge, but they didn't have time to clear the ramp. If they'd cleared the ramp, Mr. Foley could have gotten up the ramp and gotten out of the station.
Would that be West Lafayette side of the bridge?
No, sir, Your Honor. Under the maintenance contract, it's the city of Lafayette's duty to clear that bridge. Fred Taylor says in his deposition it was his job to clear the bridge, but he didn't do it. So maybe the city of West Lafayette did come in, actually, and clear it all. My point is it was possible to clear it. That's the only point I wish to make there. The last thing I want to say is that if the court sustains a trial judge here, what you're saying in effect is, if you're just one guy and you go out there and you get hurt one time because they don't perform their duty, you don't have any rights under the ADA. I don't think that's what the Act is supposed to do. I think the Act is supposed to provide individual people with individual remedies for individual wrongs, and that's what we're seeking here.
Thank you, Mr. Justice. Thank you, Ms. Roberts. The case is taken under advisement, and the court